Welcome to The Week Ahead in Russia, RFERL's Monday podcast about significant developments and upcoming events in Moscow and beyond. I'm Steve Gutterman, and my guest this week is Olga Oliker, Program Director for Europe and Central Asia at the Crisis Group. Thanks very much for joining me today again, Dr. Oliker.
Well, thank you for having me back, Steve.
All right. Great to have you. Now, the first time you joined me on this podcast was a little over 1 month ago, and it was one day before the U.S. and Russian presidents held a video call, I think it was a video call, amid concerns about Moscow's troop buildup near Ukraine and its sweeping demands for restrictions on NATO enlargement and activities, among other things. This time, we're again going to be talking about talks. U.S. and Russian diplomats met in Geneva last night, and they're holding their main discussions today. Again, this is about the Russian buildup and Russia's demands for what it calls security guarantees. Now, on Tuesday, a meeting of the NATO-Russia Council is planned, I believe, for the first time since 2019. And on Wednesday, talks within the framework of the OSCE, which includes all the countries involved, and that includes Russia. Those talks will be held, NATO in Brussels, I believe, and the OSCE ones in Vienna, where it's headquartered. Now, Olga, I'm interested in your opinion about the chances that these talks can succeed, or maybe it would be better to say the chances, I guess, with the implicit Russian threat of a new military offensive against Ukraine looming, the chances that failure or collapse can be avoided. I have to say that to me, based on what Russia has been saying lately, things do not look very good. Deputy Foreign Minister Sergei Rybkov, who is the main Russian diplomat in the talks today, said yesterday, I believe, that Russia would, quote, make no concessions under pressure, unquote. And he warned that talks could potentially end very quickly if Moscow is dissatisfied. Now, Rybkov also reiterated Russia's insistence on a binding guarantee that NATO will not take in any new member in the vicinity of Russia, including Ukraine, and suggested that if the United States is unwilling to discuss that and another major demand, the negotiations could be scuttled and end quickly. Now, this could be bluff or bluster, I suppose, and Rybkov made very brief remarks after the talks with U.S. Deputy Secretary of State Wendy Sherman last night that were less confrontational. But personally, I see very little room for compromise, assuming Russia even wants compromise, between this Russian demand and the repeated statements from the United States and NATO that countries must be free to make their own sovereign foreign policy, and that obviously includes Ukraine. Now, Olga, do you think that's a big potential stumbling block? In a recent thread, you said that Russia is not looking for off-ramps in these talks. I know it's a tough question, but given that approach and the recent comments, what do you think about the prospects for the talks today and this week?
So, look, an off-ramp is when someone's in over their head, when they've made a mistake and they need a face-saving way out. That's definitely not Russia, right? Mm-hmm. They're not in over their head. They don't think they've screwed any of this up, and they're not looking for a face-saving way out. But they are looking for a deal. And so what they've done is they've laid out their wish list of deals in those two draft treaties they published. And then the question becomes, what might they accept short of that? And right, it's not a negotiation unless there's some room for compromise. They keep saying that the prospect of NATO enlargement to the east, to former Soviet countries, et cetera, is not a place for compromise. From NATO's perspective, saying we are closing the doors of this alliance is not something they're going to compromise on. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, there's also no particular appetite in NATO to enlarge to post-Soviet states. I think NATO is going to enlarge Sweden and Finland might be the more likely candidates. And that's particularly if Russia continues to be active, shall we say, in Europe. Mm-hmm. But, it's they're talking past each other at some point, right? The Russians want NATO to commit to not doing something that they're not going to do, but that it's against the alliance's nature to commit to not doing it because, well, you never know what's going to happen.
Right.
Things change. And it's just alliances are you know, the idea of closing the door to an alliance is a bit of a strange one. So on the one hand, there really is no intention, particularly to let Ukraine into NATO. On the other hand, there's absolutely no NATO desire to put that down on paper and get all the present members to sign on to it. I think that is an impasse. Whether or not there's a way to resolve it is something we're going to see.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, very kind of, that does seem to be like the biggest question. I mean, to me, there seems to be maybe some wiggle room in Russia's demands for, you know, non-deployment of weapons, you know, near its borders, and kind of returning to the situation as it was in 1997, with, you know, with, they're saying NATO should not, or Western countries should not be deploying weapons or conducting military.
We're not going to come back to 1997, I don't think.
Right.
But I do think there's room for deals on exercises and deployments and so forth and so on. And I think there absolutely, there has to be room for that, particularly if Russia is willing to limit some of its own exercises and deployments.
Right. And I think, I mean, on that question, I think Russia's been a little more sort of equivocal about, you know, what it exactly is demanding in practice. I mean, you know, sometimes when Putin has spoken, sometimes he's said, you know, certain types of weapons close to our, in, I think last time he said, you know, very close, or, you know, in direct proximity to our borders. So it does seem like there's room for movement on that, I guess. And as you say, exercises, other things. But then this question of, you know, non-expansion of NATO just seems to loom so large. Okay. And yeah, I guess we'll find out. Find out today. Sorry, go ahead.
To be fair, I think they had the closest thing you can get to a commitment that Ukraine would not join NATO in the form of a Ukrainian constitution that included a commitment to non-bloc status. Now, Ukraine changed that after the war began in 2014, which also kind of tells you, you know, the commitments last only as long as one is committed to them.
Right. Exactly. And of course, you know, Russia's, one of Russia's main kind of gripes, or, you know, the foundation of some of its demands is the claim that NATO and the U.S. duped Russia in the 90s and said they wouldn't expand. But that's obviously was not on paper. Russia doesn't even claim that was on paper. And yet they have, you know, been accused of violating several agreements that were on paper, including the Budapest Memorandum, you know, which I guess protects the sovereignty of Ukraine. So I guess with that sort of big question looming of the non-expansion, my second question is related to the first. Again, probably tough to say, but what do you see as kind of the best realistically possible outcome of the talks, I guess, today and this week? An agreement to talk more, perhaps? I mean, obviously, because Russia is saying, well, these talks could end very fast. Or is there something more positive than that you see could potentially coming out of these talks? Do you see Russia potentially making concessions despite its tough rhetoric?
I mean, look, the only way this gets decided quickly is if it gets decided badly, right? If the talks fail, Russian forces start rolling along, more sanctions are imposed, more buildups, all of that, you know, could happen within days. And then, you know, depending on how that works out, there might be talks after that. But, you know, there's a big risk that lots of people die and there's a lot of pain in between. Success is really unlikely in the form of a deal this week that decisively solves anything, right? So at best, you get some small unilateral promises from both sides and commitments to keep talking and to keep negotiations going, and probably, perhaps, you know, if we're lucky, some pullback of Russian forces, which I imagine will be one of the conditions that Western countries impose on anything they're likely to do. So, you know, I think that's kind of the best case scenario. But I do think it's worth underlining that in the worst case scenario, at the end of it, you're still back to the table for talks. And that might be part of Russia's calculus, that they will prove how serious they are. They will prove what the consequences are. So if the Western countries aren't willing to believe them in advance, they're happy to demonstrate their point and then, you know, okay, you can talk now or you can talk later, I think is some of the messaging that at least, you know, at least some of the subtext of the messaging.
Right. And I guess that's obviously not a very heartening, view, but certainly it does seem to be one of the kind of threats or one of the things that Russia is signaling, with Ryabkov saying, we're not going to wait forever and we're not going to let these talks drag out. He said last night, I don't think we'll be wasting our time tomorrow. So, and it's really hard, I think he said a lot of things that can be read in many ways, so I wouldn't put much into that. But it does seem like a big question of, what will come out of today's talks. And one thing you mentioned, what the West, what U.S. and NATO may be, they've said they're going to lay out their concerns, but I don't think we've heard a lot about in detail about what they will actually say. So that's another thing that that we may find out.
But look, the Western countries don't like Russian military buildups and exercises either, you're not going to stop them, but you could very coherently develop some agreements and arrangements that limit them. It doesn't, it's not easy, right? You can't do it immediately, but you can, that INF deal the Russians have been talking about, the INF treaty is dead, but limits on deployments of intermediate range missiles or perhaps nuclear capable ones in Europe. They've said that the 9M729, which is the, the Western designation for the missile that Western states say violated the INF, have said that could be included. If there's a verification system, that doesn't actually, from a military standpoint, I don't think it's all that meaningful because you can move missiles and then your missiles that are not in Europe come very close to Europe or become missiles in Europe. But it would be, it would offer at least a political signal of willingness to talk and engagement, and it would create some precedent for verification of other things. I think conventional deployments are really hard, right? On the one hand, okay, nothing near your borders, but then you look at where Kaliningrad is and you look at the Baltic countries around it and you start trying to measure just how far away from borders anybody is supposed to be, and you suddenly realize that it's really hard to make people happy.
Yeah.
But you can still have that conversation. It's a difficult conversation, but you can still have it. In the Black Sea, you can talk about just how much anyone should be doing their freedom of navigation exercises in water that the Russians say is Russian territorial water because Crimea is Russian, and everybody else says, no, it's not because Crimea is Ukrainian. Really tough things, but these are tough things you can have a conversation about, and people haven't been willing to have that conversation up until now, because they felt that the buildups and the escalations were kind of a feature, not a bug of the system, that, if you keep doing this, the other side will back down. So if this does force them both to start talking about it and to limit some of these more escalatory activities and behaviors, that's great. It's just that if you expect it to have rapid results, you're going to be disappointed and frustrated, and that might lead to more escalation.
Right. I guess one takeaway from what you're saying may be that, there's certainly room for discussion of some of the things that are kind of on the table. To me, it just all comes back to this non-expansion demand. It just seems like it's going to be hard to avoid, that kind of getting in the way of anything else. But I guess it all depends on, what Russia is willing to do and what the United States and NATO are going to be kind of talking about with them.
I mean, look, if you have a real conversation and real discussions of other issues, and they really are, in Russia's view, helpful to Russia's security interests. Are they really going to say, nope, unless you sign a treaty that says you are never, ever going to have Ukraine in your club, we are going to start a war? Are they going to do that? You know, I don't know the answer to that question. Maybe. Yeah. But, you know, this is what we're going to see.
All right. Absolutely. Okay. Thanks very much. We're running out of time and we'll wrap it up there. Olga, thanks so much for joining me again today.
Thanks so much for inviting me again.
All right. Great to talk to you. Listeners, thanks for listening, and please tune in next Monday. I'll be off, but the podcast will have a guest host.